Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I am now on the line with Malachy McAllister, indeed well known to not only the Irish community here, but on both sides of the Atlantic, a frequent guest on our program. Malachy and his family, they were forced to flee Belfast back in 1988, as was his family, and this followed the loyalist assassination attempt on his home, which targeted not only his wife and himself, but also his children. And there, to say that there is startling new information which has been provided by Relatives for Justice. It's a leading Belfast not-for-profit organization, and we are indeed fortunate, as we have in the past, to link up in this conversation here with Mark Thompson. Mark is a founding member and director of Relatives for Justice. He's responsible for the development and management of Relatives for Justice, and has overseen the growth of the organization from a successful and dedicated voluntary campaigning group to the professional advocacy and support organization that it is today. Firstly, let's link with Malachy McAllister. Hello, Malachy.
How are you doing, Adrian?
All right, and let's also link with Mark Thompson in Belfast. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Adrian.
Now, let's first of all start with Mark Thompson and this new development. What is it, and how does it relate to the McAllister case and Malachy and his family?
Well, people will cast their minds back to the murder of Pat Finucane and the campaign, the admirable campaign by the Finucane family. We have a public inquiry into Pat's murder, which took place on 12th of February 1989 at his home in Belfast, where he sat at for his 72 years family. And now it's gone more than then, and the family had always said that there'd been collusion in the killing, that there'd been threats made indirectly to Pat through clients he'd represented, and so forth. And if we come forward a number of years in that campaign, and there's a great work that Congress has done, particularly through Congressman Chris Smith and the Health Safety Committee, and holding the attorneys and calling for the inquiry. And the evidence that has emerged over the years, we now see a picture whereby there were several agents involved in plotting and procuring the murder of Pat Finucane, including the people that carried out the killing, all aided by British military intelligence. And the family have demanded an inquiry into the events, because not everything has always been known about the web of collusion and how far it reached and the tentacles of where it went to. And in some senses, that campaign has grown with international awareness, and the name Pat Finucane in itself is synonymous with British state collusion. More recently, the British Prime Minister, in a bid to avoid holding the public inquiry, which was promised, by the way, by the British government of Western Park during the negotiations and the World Party talks when it was raised, they made a commitment to that inquiry along with a number of others, and they refused to hold it. So in a bid to avoid having to hold that inquiry, what the British government did was appointed Sir Desmond de Silva, a leading British QC with an international reputation. And that man began a private process. Now, the family didn't agree with that, but that process nonetheless took place, and de Silva reported back to the British Prime Minister, and the British Prime Minister made a public apology about collusion that took place in the murder of Pat Finucane. Now, there still needs to be an inquiry into the murder of Pat Finucane, there's no doubt about that. And I think the silver hardens the case for an inquiry, because not everything's been revealed. But when we talk about the web of collusion and the deceit of collusion, the silver looked at 1.5 million documents. He had access to covert operations that were being taken place by the Secret Service of the British government and the military through its force research unit and through the IUC Special Branch. And what he uncovered was not only in terms of looking at Pat's murder, he uncovered a series of actions, and one of those actions links directly to the attack on Molly McAllister's home in October 2nd, 1988, when he and his wife were out and his mother-in-law was lying in the house, and there was an attempt, 15-16 shots fired through the window of the home. And of course, Molly will talk more eloquently about that and the impact that has had, the devastating impact that has had on his family, having to leave our country and take refuge in Canada and make their way to America. Now, we have other documents as well from investigative journalists and from other people, and that also indicates that Malky was a target by the EFF and the Red Hand Commandos, because Brian Nelson, the man who procured and was involved in the murder of Pat Finnegan, was involved directly in the attack on Malky's home too. So in the De Silva report, we've identified through a series of other information, including in that report, that Malky was indeed directly targeted by the British government. And there's no question about that.
Of course, on our own side of the Atlantic here, and in fact, a great number, hundreds, if not by now, thousands of people have rallied again on many occasions to prevent Maliki's deportation. It is something that I'm sure, Maliki, you will be able to describe for us, and pretty much what has gone on and taken place since your arrival in the United States.
Yeah, Adrian, as you know, the campaign has been going on from 1986. We had our trial here, well, a hearing here for political asylum in 2000, and that resulted in, briefly, my wife and three kids being granted political asylum here, all dead. That only lasted for 29 days, and I was deportable at that point because that's meant payment long cash for my political activities back in the early 80s during the hunger strike. So, at the end of the day, what happened then was that we continued to appeal our case through the courts here. And we went up to the High Circuit, Third Circuit Court in Pennsylvania, and the result of that was that, again, I was found to be deportable, and along with my wife and kids. And from then, we have struggled, and our campaign's been ongoing all these years. We have managed to remain here together, and as you know, my wife died 9 years ago. It's been a long, lonely fight, but at the same time, we've had the support of the Irish American community, and certainly congressional support along the way, very much so, with respect to Senator Menendez, Senator Schumer, and our local politicians, Peter King, Elliot Engel, and the great Chris Smith, who's campaigned for human rights right across the nation and right across the world. So at this stage, you know, we're very surprised to learn all these shared facts. Well, not necessarily surprised. We always knew, or I knew, there was something hidden there. And but the campaign has never been totally directed towards fighting for, you know, to get this out. But now we have the information, it's very clear, and we want to make it very clear to your listeners and all who's out there that the case stands really on its merits now, and it's very clear that I was a victim, and we were a victim of state-sponsored terrorism.
Yeah, and when we talk about state-sponsored terrorists, of course, the bottom line on this one, I go back to Mark, to you. Collusion between the UDA at that time and the Northern Ireland, what is now the Northern Ireland Police Services, but at that point, you might spell out for us, Mark, about the police force as it was, and in fact the British troops, and how did that play out at that time in the north?
Well, obviously, during the conflict, the British government were presenting to the outside world that this was a sectarian problem. And all we had loyalists, and we had Republicans, and that the police and the military were on the ground trying to keep the peace, when in fact, quite the opposite was the case, and there's a broader political context and a historical context to which your listeners will be very familiar with. But in a sense, the private position of the British government was that they had infiltrated loyalist paramilitaries, and they were using them in pseudo-gangs throughout the 70s and the early 1980s with, shadowy military intelligence groups known as the Military Reconnaissance Force, involved in implanting bombs at McGurk's Bar, assisting loyalists, assisting people to do a number of things. By 1985, a sense of it was the Anglo-Irish Agreement was happening. Republicans had organized themselves politically and were presenting a different threat politically in terms of emerging out of the hunger strikes. And I think within the South of Ireland, the Rainbow Coalition and the Garrett Fitzgerald Fine Gael and the Big Spring Labour government had presented an opportunity whereby it seemed to be within the British way of thinking that they may have been, the politics was in the ascendancy, so the Anglo-Irish Agreement emerged. Now, obviously, for the Anglo-Irish Agreement, they win the support of the main nationalist party, then the SDLP and the Catholic Church. Loyalists needed to stop killing Catholics. And so that's effectively what happened. That project failed, and the hawks within the British establishment returned to the policy of collusion with the Force Research Unit and Brigadier Gordon Kerr, and the recruitment of Brian Nelson, the importation of a shipment of weapons bought from the apartheid regime in South Africa with the proceeds of a bank robbery in Portadown, and loyalists rearmed themselves. They rearmed themselves with this weaponry that was brought in and distributed among them, and with intelligence documents, which are commonly known as P-files, P-cards. And Brian Nelson became the chief intelligence officer within the EFF, the largest loyalist paramilitary organization. He was also providing information to the UVF and the Red Hand Commandos, that the organization had also attacked Maliki's home. So he was the center kingpin in all of this, if you will, providing the intelligence, deciding who would live and who would die. And what was appeared to be random sectarian attacks in bookmaker shops and clubs and pubs and of political activists and elected representatives took place almost frequently, where loyalists could come into communities that were saturated with British military on the ground in helicopters, where security cameras were switched off, and conspicuously these people disappeared and people were killed, and then there was no proper investigation. And it led to a number of calls about the threats that were being made to people, the killings that were taking place, the type of weaponry that was being used and acquired by loyalists to carry out these attacks, the intelligence documents that they showed to journalists when they questioned some of the allegations they were making about people being targeted. And what quickly became apparent was that the loyalists were being resourced, and the people resourcing them was British military intelligence and RUC Special Branch. And we were saying this in late 1988 through 89 and 1990 and the early 90s, and this was out of sight. And of course, people like myself were targeted, arrested, detained, and threatened, and told that we would end up with a bullet in the head because of the human rights work we were doing. But that did not deter us, because people around us were being murdered. I was going to homes, and after the scenes of crime, officers in the RUC had left. I was picking out bullets of furniture. We were mopping floors abroad and rolling up carpets or taking mattresses out. We were taking statements from families, and we knew what was happening. We were trying to get the outside world to listen to. And Amnesty International listened to us. A number of key American people began to listen to us. And we began to piece together the awful carnage that was taking place, and we were pointing the finger directly at the British government. And though the British government were denying this, and they brought John Stevens over, one of their most senior British police officers, to investigate allegations of collusion. And of course, he's been back three times. He's looked at Pat Finucane's murder, and he's looked at collusion, and he says, yes, there was a policy of collusion, and senior military and police officers were involved in killings. And he prepared files for the prosecution of 24 members of military intelligence and REC Special Branch, and the public prosecutor in Belfast refused to prosecute those. And so his report's never been made public. the silver's been brought in to look at not only the killing of Pat Finnegan, because remember what Geraldine Finnegan has always said, such an admirable lady, she's always said, looking at Pat's killing isn't just about Pat. This is an awful, awful web of deceit and collusion and death and destruction that's went right across our community. And the people at the heart of it have been the people in power. So if you distill it down into the fact that, you know, Malachy McAllister is a lucky man and his family are lucky people, he could have been another statistic in Belfast. His family could have been another statistic because these people came and shot up homes. They didn't care. They've killed children in homes. They've killed the spouses and the parents of people. They've killed pensioners. They don't care. And the weapons they were given and they were sent to people's houses to do this. And it was carnage and havoc. And part of it as well, the intensity of this happened as political talks were happening behind the scenes. And we've killings in Rockin' Island and Bill Flynn, a great man and a great supporter of the Irish peace process in New York himself, you know, coming from Rockin' Island and has been very focused on that and very disappointed too with the British government's failure to acknowledge collusion in those killings. And so with all of this stuff happening, whereby this pressure of all of this happening was also turning itself onto the politicians in the community, people like John Hume and Gerry Adams, in terms of trying to get a peace deal. And what the British were essentially trying to do was to get people to limit what was attainable in the carnage that was taking place and the chaos that was taking place in the streets. And so the policy had a political directive as well, but undoubtedly it did. And we've been very clear. We documented 229 killings between the weapons from South Africa arriving through British military intelligence to the loyalists from late 1987, December 87, until September 1994. And we published a document detailing 229 killings. We now estimate those killings to be around 300 because loyalists turned those guns on themselves and their feuds and all of the criminality that they were involved in. And then we supported Raymond McCord, who's been to the Congress and spoke, and he's been to the United States himself, a Protestant man, who along with ourselves uncovered quite a number of other killings related to the criminality of loyalists using these weapons, where they were being protected by the special branch. So there needs to be truth about this, but importantly, the vindication and validation of the story that Malachy McAllister and his family have told Irish American that have supported them, while the British have privately been telling the American administration there's no threat to Malachy McAllister, there was never anything about Malachy McAllister. And now we know through a government appointed barrister, Sir Desmond De Silva, that he's clear in the paperwork that he has and that we've identified that Malachy McAllister was targeted and that the British government bore full responsibility. The intelligence agents within the British military at highest levels in London and in Belfast were directing through their covert operations these loyalists, and they sent them on the 2nd of October to murder Malachy McAllister and his family. And thankfully, that didn't happen.
Mark Thompson there gave us a lot of information. I just want to go back to Malachy McAllister. This attack took place, Malachy, some 25 years ago, and I'm sure for you and many of those in similar situations, to have this dragging on and constantly swept under the carpet are very much attempts, you know, by the establishment. It is something that we're actually going to hear about this week, because you and indeed your U.S. lawyer, Eamon Dornan, and guest speakers will address a public gathering of Irish Americans and others to mark the 25th anniversary of the attack on your family. That's going to take place, Malachy, I believe, at O'Lunny's in Times Square, which is located at 145 West 45th Street, between Broadway and 6th Avenue, on this coming Thursday. Is that right, Malachy?
That's right, Adrian. Yeah, we're hoping to have phone speakers are on the net, and just till go back to Mark, what was Mark was saying there. Yes, there's certainly more than there's a lot of Mulligan McAllisters out there and families who have had to endure the troubles in Northern Ireland. And you know, we've lived this here for the past 25 years, and to be honest with you, it seems like yesterday. And you know, we'll have this news break now with all the troubles, and we're certainly very lucky and conscious that we survived. And we're here to be able to talk about it. And there's many a family in Belfast that is still struggling, and the Pat Finucan case is beginning on at the same time, you know. And but for the Pat Finucan continuing their struggle, you know, cases like mine wouldn't be out there now. And, you know, Mark Thompson, Mark Sykes, and Relatives for Justice are doing a remarkable job there, trying to get the truth out to people like ourselves who need answers. And we've been trying these answers for the past 25 years. In the early stages, we did send letters to the RUC requesting information with respect to the weapons that were used in our house. We did invite them to tell us that, you know, this targeted attack on our home was certainly, and not just a random attack, but that's, you know, the facts are very clear now that we specifically targeted in this case. And, you know,
I have to say that this new development, and some 25 years later, to find out, of course, that there was collusion involving the British Army, the police service at the time, and indeed the lopsided collusion with the loyalist paramilitaries is hardly a shock to any of us. But what it does mean, and I think it is finally coming to a head, thanks again to you, Mark Thompson, and Eamon Dornan here. It's high time, and again, as we have many times in the past, Mark, thank you for letting us know. This is new, it is very significant, and hopefully it will for once and for all bring to the fore something, as I say, that that has been going on in Malachy McAllister's case for the last 25 years. We leave it there, and thank you, Mark Thompson, and to Malachy. We will see you, and of course, Eamon Dornan and speakers at, again, Olani's in Times Square. That's next Thursday at 7 p.m. Let me give you contact number for Malachy McAllister. That's 917-681-0369. Or indeed, you can send him an email, malachy101@aol.com. To both of you, good luck, and we'll see you on Thursday. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.